You're listening to special content produced by And Another Thing on New England Public Media. Treasurer Wooden, welcome to the show. You have described your baby bonds bill as an anti-generational poverty bill. How exactly will this program work in order to achieve that lofty goal?
Well, it's great to be with you. And yes, I describe it as an anti-generational racial equity and economic growth bill. And it does that by creating a trust for every baby born into poverty in the state of Connecticut and depositing, creating an account at birth for those children. And that money will be invested over a period of not less than 18 years. And so when they turn 18, they become eligible for it. They have to be a Connecticut resident and they have to take a financial literacy requirement course in order to claim those funds. And the funds can be used for limited purposes for areas that are directly correlated with poverty and the wealth gap. One is higher education, two is home ownership, three is investing in a business or some sort of entrepreneurial pursuit, and the fourth is a retirement savings account of some sort. And of course, no 18-year-old is going to do that, but this is the funds can be claimed from anywhere from age 18 to 30. And so we currently project that based on the state has made a $600 million commitment over the next 12 years to this program, and that would be $50 million a year. Based on current projections, that would start off each child being born with $3,200 into that account. Over 18 years, that would grow to approximately $11,000. And that's how we intend to operate this program. And there have been lots of studies to show kind of the positive effects and how this could kind of change the trajectory. One such study is a 2019 Columbia University study that analyzed the federal proposal put forward by Senator Cory Booker and Representative Ayanna Pressley. And the Columbia University study said that this could be the most powerful tool to eliminate the racial wealth gap among young adults.
So what are the parameters around that? If you're born into poverty, you get the money when you turn 18, or you have a chance to use it between 18 to 30. What if that family decides, what if dad takes a job out of state and that family has to leave? Is that child now null and void of being able to utilize the $3,200?
They are still able to utilize it if they come back to Connecticut and become Connecticut residents again and otherwise qualify, right? So you have to be born as a Connecticut resident and for poverty, it's on our state's Medicaid program. And when you claim the funds, you have to be a Connecticut resident.
And this is the Husky program, is that correct?
Correct, the Husky. Yep, that's our Medicaid program.
When you were proposing the bill, and even when it passed, you said that this was a way to directly invest in children born into poverty, that it would boost Connecticut's economy. How would that happen?
Well, there's another study done by McKinsey, again, 2019 study that showed that closing the racial wealth gap over the next decade would increase gross domestic product by 1 to 1.5 trillion, or 4 to 6% of GDP. There have been other studies that talks about a 2020 Citi study that talks about the economic cost of racial disparities, economic disparities, discrimination, and so forth. So lots of data in terms of the U.S. And so Connecticut is obviously a subset of that, right? And so the same effect would take place here of reducing the level of poverty and the boost to our economy. Additionally, the program is intentionally designed with features that recycles that investment back into the Connecticut economy. For example, the home ownership has to be purchasing or down payment on a home in Connecticut. Business ownership or investment has to be in Connecticut. And so for all of those reasons, that's how it is an economic boost to our state.
You mentioned that it was a 20-city study. How did Connecticut come to be the first to actually enact this program?
I just felt really strong about our policy in this legislative session meeting the moment, and the moment of the pandemic, right, and how inequalities were highlighted and exacerbated during this time, health, economic, and you name it, education. And so we were at a unique moment in time. In addition to that, in the post-George Floyd racial reckoning, we're looking at all of these issues. And so I really felt strongly that we needed to, and I needed to propose bold legislation that would be transformative and not just, you know, not just throwing money at a problem, but something rooted in sound policy and work that's been done around it, and something that would be an investment that would take a while to see the payoff. So often we're focused on short-term solutions, but as a treasurer managing billions of dollars for beneficiaries who are not going to see any of those monies for 10, 20, 30 years out, I think long-term. And so that's why this was so attractive to me in terms of proposing it and pushing so hard to get it passed. And I'm very proud to say not only that are we the first in the nation, but it was passed on a bipartisan basis, because poverty knows no color. In fact, 62% of Connecticut families on Medicaid are white. That still leaves a disproportionately high number of kids of color born into poverty. But this is something that touches everyone in every community in our state.
You did have tremendous legislative support. Senator Dick Blumenthal, of course, said he'd like to take this program to the federal level. Massachusetts Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley was involved. And in fact, Massachusetts actually launched a program back in July of last year, which they call their Baby Steps Savings Plan. That's a little different than the baby bonds, though. But can you explain?
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned Senator Blumenthal and Representative Pressley in particular. Both of them weighed in and gave support here in Connecticut to the state program, including Representative Pressley. So that was very much appreciated as we were seeking to get this adopted. And in terms of the Massachusetts program, which is different in the sense it's focused on, as I understand it, setting up a savings account, a college savings account, or 529 for every child born into the state. I think that's an excellent program. Different in terms of scope, scale, and use of funds, but I applaud Treasurer Goldberg for that initiative, and I would say, right, the amount, it's I guess a $50 college savings seed deposit, but the amount is actually less important up front than the concept. And there in the state of Oklahoma, there's a similar program, which actually shows that families that have these accounts early in life for their kids, they actually tend to save more and to add to it once they have it. Additionally, it just changes behavior, which anecdotally, that always made sense to me, is that if it's hard to think about going off to college if you don't see it as a possibility, if you don't see it as affordable, if you don't have a pathway. And by setting up these accounts, that starts families thinking early and young adults with these accounts thinking about college and thinking about having something. So I think it is an excellent baby step towards advancing issues of equity.
I mean, it sounds like a great opportunity for families in need, Mr. Treasurer, but it also sounds expensive. How can Connecticut pay for all of the families that will bear children into this program? Is there data that predicts childbirth rates over a certain time frame, and then does that valuation indicate the cost of the program?
So there is data. The cost of the program, or what will be expended in the program, is fixed based on what our legislature adopted and the governor signed into law, which is $600 million over the next 12 years, and that's $50 million allocated a year. Now, based on taking a look back over the past 8 years or so, we know that that's roughly around 16,000 babies have been born, just taking a backward-looking approach. And that's how we arrive at the estimated initial contribution going forward will be $3,200 per child. So if the birth rates increase or decrease, that will alter the initial seed amount. But the cost is fixed. And let me make a broader point on the cost. We spend, each state, we spend billions of dollars a year on a variety of programs, services. And the real question is, are we spending taxpayer dollars effectively, efficiently? And I argue that this program, the return on investment is so significant that it is money well spent. And this was approved within a budget for our state with no tax increase. So this can be done in a way that protects taxpayers, makes smart investments that have a payout for our state's economy and for local communities, and do it in a really fiscally responsible way, rooted in sound policy.
Well, to that point, yes, it did pass. As you mentioned, it passed with bipartisan support, but you did have some naysayers. 16 people voted against it. What do you say to the opponents of the bill that ask, is this the best use of Connecticut funds? Could this money have gone toward the educational system, Connecticut schools?
Well, I say that any day, all day, if I could put forward a bill in the legislature and between the House and the Senate and to get only 16 naysayers, I'll take that. That's a home run. But with that said, to your question about could it be better spent, no. I think this is an extremely well spent and smart investment in our state, and that in terms of we're also making investments in workforce development, critically important, in education, and in particular in some of our lowest performing school districts, making those smart investments. So it's not about doing one thing or one initiative program being the panacea for all of our problems. It's about putting together a collection of policy responses to address our problems and to advance our state in a multifaceted way. And I believe with this budget and with this program in particular, that's exactly what we have done here.
The Credit Union for Connecticut is going to offer financial literacy, financial education to families involved in this program. What did you look for or seek in terms of partnership from a banking partner to help with this program?
So we look for partners early on and very broadly, right? So credit unions, you know, they jumped in and, you know, extremely appreciative of their support, but, you know, they care a lot, as do I, about financial literacy, which is a requirement within this program. And so, and they care about, you know, they're often in communities that are underbanked by traditional institutions that are poorer. So So that's been a great partnership, but it was a very broad coalition of faith leaders, of child care advocates, of economic development corporations for communities, housing, affordable housing coalitions. So the coalition was very broad, and it met and was consistent with the breadth and scope of this policy program, you know, being anti-poverty, being racial equity, being economic development and growth focus. And that's what our coalition looked like.
If I can pivot for a moment and touch on something that you mentioned earlier, I'm going to focus on the area of inequality, because you pledged to work on that once you were elected, focused a great deal of attention on reducing systemic inequalities, from the responsible gun policy you took to Capitol Hill in December 19, just this past pandemic, you launched the disability targeted program. You've challenged the federal government's practices on PPP for small businesses. There's so much more that you are working on for justice. And perhaps most powerful was your corporate call to action initiated following the murder of George Floyd. You are doing what no other treasurer has done before you. Why have you taken on the role of the social and equitable state treasurer?
Perhaps there are lots of responses to that, but I'll start with saying caring about social justice, equity, has been a part of who I've been my entire life. You know, my 21 years as an investment lawyer, you know, within my law firm, you know, I focused on these issues. You know, as a city council president for 4 years, I focused on these issues. You know, I participated in as a student in a desegregation busing program, from third grade, you know, graduating through high school. And so it's very much a part of who I am. And so I bring that with me to the role as a treasurer. Now, the killing of George Floyd, that, you know, I've often referred to as our modern day Emmett Till moment in America. And it just raised the level of consciousness and brought us to this period of racial reckoning. And as the only elected African-American treasurer in the country, as the only African-American elected statewide in New England, I felt a particular obligation in this period of the pandemic and racial reckoning to lean in, to utilize my platform in office in a way that moved the needle on these critically important issues at a critical juncture in Connecticut and our nation's history. And doing so in a way that is completely aligned, and some people may be surprised by this, but completely aligned with being a treasurer. You mentioned a corporate call to action. The work that I'm doing with, and I'll just say for your listeners, a corporate call to action is a call to CEOs in corporate America to get off the sidelines and become positive, constructive forces for social and economic justice. And 18 of the country's most prominent financial services firms that are partnering with me, along with the Ford Foundation, in closing racial economic inequality in our country. But doing it because it's not only the right thing to do, but it is good for the bottom line. It's good for the bottom line of corporate America. It's good for the employees, the customers. It's good for communities. It's good as a shareholder in these corporations, because diversity, equity, and inclusion, for example, there's lots of studies that show that companies with diverse boards outperform their peer group without any diversity in terms of shareholder value, in terms of generating revenues. I am unique as a treasurer in the country, and because of that, I also felt uniquely called to lean in and to lend my voice and my actions towards making a difference, making an impact on these important issues and doing it in ways that supported, you know, certainly here in Connecticut, supported our economic growth trajectory, right? So lifting people out of poverty, closing wealth disparities, those are all things that are going to pay significant dividends for the state of Connecticut in the long term. I have felt compelled on multiple levels to be a leader in that fight.
Connecticut received its first credit rating upgrade in 20 years while in the midst of a pandemic. How did that happen?
That was a top priority of mine coming into office as a treasurer to improve our credit standing. And it's the basic blocking and tackling. So it's smart fiscal policies, reducing our level of borrowing, addressing in a serious way, you know, our high fixed costs and our pension fund liabilities. But those policies, increasing our rainy day fund to historic highs. You know, we went into the pandemic with a rainy day fund that was twice as large as the 2008 recession going into that period. So just putting us in a very, very strong fiscal footing. And so at the height of the pandemic, when other states were struggling for liquidity and cash management and some to even meet payroll, we were in a very strong position and Wall Street has noticed. So managing through that well, managing our response to the pandemic well, and that led to, you mentioned, the first credit rating upgrade in more than 20 years in March, and more recently, all of the major rating agencies have upgraded our ratings. And that has never happened in the history of Connecticut. And the last time it's happened anywhere in the country was in 2008 with another state. And so just smart fiscal policies and doing the day-to-day blocking and tackling that in giving Wall Street confidence in our changed trajectory. The other thing I'll say on that, which was noticed last year, for the first time, you know, our rainy day fund grew to such a level that I was able to make an extra payment in addition to our regular annual contribution to pension liabilities. I was able to make an extra payment. This year will be the second time. Last year was the first time in the state's history that we've done that. This year will be the second time. And so all of those efforts are being noticed, and we've had record demand from investors in our bonds when we've issued debt. We've had historically low interest rates, and you know, I'm proud of that work, and we have to stay the course. You know, it's a long distance runner's game, so we've had some great success, you know, in my short tenure, but a lot more work to be done.
And lastly, Mr. Treasurer, do you plan to work alongside Senator Cory Booker and Senator Blumenthal to perhaps take the baby bonds bill on a national level?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Already, you know, in discussions. We were in discussions, you know, before I introduced it. But with Senator Blumenthal, Senator Booker, Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro, Congressman John Larson, Representative Presley, but a host of members of Congress who care about this at the national level, I absolutely intend to partner with them to make the case for a federal baby bonds bill.
State Treasurer Sean Wooden, thank you so much for joining us on And Another Thing.
Thank you.
I'm Derek Kennedy. We welcome your comments. Call us at 800-639-9120. Follow us on social media at Hello and Another. Email us andanotherthing@nepm.org.